Hello, and welcome to Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. It's February 21st, 2016. It was on this day in 1972 that U.S. President Richard Nixon visited the People's Republic of China. The man who had been known for his strong anti-communist views throughout his political career made the announcement of his upcoming visit to a shocked nation in July 1971.
I have taken this action because of my profound conviction that all nations will gain from a reduction of tensions and a better relationship between the United States and the People's Republic of China.
Today on the program, Pete Musto is here with his weekly look at higher education. Pete will tell us about a new report that says the process schools use to choose students is causing big problems. Anna Mateo will be with us, as she is every Sunday, with words and their stories. This week, she tells us about the many expressions in American English that use the word touch. And as we always do on the Sunday edition of Learning English Weekend, we will present The Making of a Nation. This week in our series, we take you back to the presidential election of 1912 and the return to national politics of former President Theodore Teddy Roosevelt. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the voice of America. Educators across the United States are calling for major changes to the admissions process in higher education. The National Center for Educational Statistics reported that American colleges and universities received more than 9 million applications between 2013 and 2014. The schools admitted more than 5 million students in that time. But a new report says the problem is not in the number of students that the schools admitted. The report is called Turning the Tide, Making Caring Common. The Harvard School of Graduate Education released the report with 80 other schools and organizations in January. The report argues that the process schools use to choose students causes major problems. Our higher education correspondent Pete Musto reports.
David Hawkins is the Executive Director for Educational Content and Policy at the National Association for College Admissions Counseling, or NACAC. Hawkins says that most colleges and universities require many things from students when they apply. Schools usually require an essay describing a student's interests or why they want to study at that school. The schools also ask for letters from teachers or other adults describing why a student is a good candidate. But, Hawkins says, schools are most concerned with a student's high school grades and standardized test results.
Your academic record is the most important factor that a university will consider when they review your application.
The report suggests that giving the most attention to academic success works for some students but hurts others. Also, academic success is not the most important quality a student should have, the report says. More attention should go to evidence of whether or not a student wants to do good in the world. Hawkins says that academic records are still the best indicator for how students will perform in college. But academic resources are not as available in poorer communities, the report argues. Also, too much attention on academic success puts pressure on young people. This pressure can be bad for their health. The Education Conservancy is an organization that fights to make higher education equal and available for everyone. Lloyd Thacker is the executive director of the Education Conservancy. He also helped write the Harvard report. Thacker says the college admissions process has changed a lot over the years.
Over the past 30 years, college admissions has become more complex, more consequential, and it's become more costly because people are applying to more colleges, which costs more money.
Thacker says that ranking systems for colleges and universities are a big part of the problem. U.S. News and World Report is a media company that creates a list of what it calls America's best colleges. The company bases the list on information collected from colleges and universities across the country. This information includes results of standardized tests like the SAT from all of a school's students. Higher average test results help put schools higher on U.S. News and World Report's list. Thacker says that higher rankings on those kinds of lists makes the schools more popular. More popularity means the schools become more selective. Bob Schaefer is the public education director for the National Center for Fair and Open Testing, or NCFOT. The NCFOT is an organization that works to show the problems in standardized testing. Schaefer argues that tests like the SAT do not truly show how students will perform in college.
Independent research shows the SAT is a very weak predictor of how someone will do in college. They underpredict for females, for students whose home language is not English, and they're simply not needed.
Thacker claims when schools become more selective, they cause students to worry less about being good people.
Too many students are learning to do whatever it takes in order to get ahead, even if that means sacrificing their own individuality, their health, their happiness, their ethical principles and behavior.
Harvard University only accepted 5.3% of students who applied in 2015. This is a record low for the school. That is why Thacker says it is important that students look past rank to find the right school.
The impact on students and on parents is that college is all about where you go. The rank has nothing to do with the quality of education that goes on at the college.
The Harvard report states that the best way to change the admissions process is by changing college applications. The report suggests that schools should ask for evidence that students care about other people. Admissions officers should look for examples of students working in their communities for long periods of time, the report says. Applications should also include questions about why students feel diversity and community service are important. Moving attention away from academic ability will make the process less about competition, the report says. Students will feel less stress about meeting higher and higher expectations. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, it's time for words and their stories. Touch is one of our five senses. It is the only language we speak as we develop inside our mothers. Touch is also important when we are young children learning about the world. Today, Anna Mateo explores expressions in American English that involve the word touch.
Reunions are a great time to touch base or stay in touch with people in your past. Today, come with us as we visit an imaginary college reunion and learn some touchstone expressions. It has been 10 years since a group of friends left college. Many of them have been out of touch with each other, but others have stayed in touch. Now let's listen as two friends talk about the party they are about to attend.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
Michael, hello. How are you?
Hi, Rachel. I'm well.
It has been a long time.
It has. I can't believe we graduated college 10 years ago. It still feels like yesterday.
I know. It will be so nice to see old friends. I've stayed in touch with many. Have you?
No. When I moved across the country, I lost touch with most of the people we graduated with.
Well, today, you can touch base with familiar faces. Speaking of familiar faces, there's Steve. He looks exactly the same.
Steve, I wonder if he's still as touchy as he was in college. He would get angry over the smallest comment.
I actually worked with him on a project recently, and he's not that sensitive anymore. Marriage, however, is a touchy subject. His wife just left him. So don't bring that up.
Got it. Hey, look. Dana came. I haven't seen her in years.
I'm so happy to see her. She was in a really serious car accident last month.
Really? That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was touch and go for a couple of weeks. Doctors were not sure if she would survive.
Oh, wow. I've been so out of touch with this group. Well, I'm glad to see she is okay. I cannot believe it. Anthony came. I thought he was overseas.
Anthony. I hope he has grown up in the past 10 years.
What do you mean?
Anthony was always a little too touchy-feely, always touching women too much in a really strange way. I actually had to hit his hand once.
Well, I'm a guy, so I never knew his touchy-feely side.
That is a good thing. I see Natasha is here. She just wrote a book about her work as a midwife. Book reviewers have called it a touching story. She is said to have a magic touch when it comes to helping women give birth.
Good for her. And I see she is still married to Gregory. He is also doing well, in publishing, I believe. He is said to have the Midas touch. Every book deal he touches turns to gold.
I could use a little of his Midas touch. With the economy in such a touchy state, it would be helpful if everything I touched turned to gold.
I hear you. Well, let's join the party.
And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. Let us know what you think about the program. Write to us at learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Anna Mateo.
The Magic Touch. Do, 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 do.
Thanks, Anna. Now, we present our popular weekly program, The Making of a Nation. Today, we report on the presidential election of 1912. The first 10 years of the 20th century in America were shaped by the strong leadership of President Theodore Roosevelt. In the second decade, he returned to national politics and once more brought dramatic changes to the United States. In 1912, Teddy Roosevelt organized a new political party, the Progressives. Roosevelt created this new party after he failed to win the Republican presidential nomination. The Republican Convention of 1912 was controlled by conservative supporters of President William Howard Taft. And as we hear now from Leo Scully and Maurice Joyce, the party nominated Taft for 4 more years in the White House.
As a result, Roosevelt broke with the Republicans, and he and his supporters held their own convention. They formed the Progressive Party and approved a platform that promised reforms. These reforms were proposed to make the government serve the people and carry out more fully their desire for social progress. The Democratic Party also nominated a candidate who supported progressive ideas. The Democrats chose Governor Woodrow Wilson of New Jersey, a former president of Princeton University. So, for the first time in many years, there were 3 major candidates for president. Wilson clearly had the best chance to win. He had the support of almost all the Democrats. The Republicans, however, were split. Some supported Taft, the others were for Roosevelt.
Roosevelt refused to accept the idea of defeat. He campaigned hard, visiting many cities and towns, making speech after speech. Wilson also campaigned hard. He seemed to enjoy it as much as Roosevelt. Taft did not like it at all. He refused to do much campaigning. He spent most of the time at his summer home. It was a quiet election campaign until the middle of October. Then, only 3 weeks before Election Day, Roosevelt was shot.
It happened in Milwaukee. Roosevelt had just left his hotel and climbed into the automobile that would carry him to the hall where he planned to make a speech. As he stood in the open car, an extremist named John Schrank ran up to him, pulled a gun from his coat, and fired a bullet into Roosevelt's chest. The bullet knocked him down. Roosevelt said it felt as if he had been kicked by a mule. He jumped up and put his hand to the wound. The bullet had passed through the inside pocket of his coat. It struck a steel case that held his glasses and went through the folded 50 pages of his written speech. These slowed the bullet, and it went only a few centimeters into his chest.
Roosevelt did not know if he was seriously wounded. He put his hand to his mouth and coughed. No blood came, and he knew the shot had not damaged his lungs. Roosevelt ordered the crowd around to stop beating Schrank. "Bring him to me," he said. He looked down at the man. "You poor creature," said Roosevelt. Then he turned away. doctors arrived. They said Roosevelt must go at once to the hospital. But Roosevelt refused. He said he would go to the hall. "I will make this speech," he said, "or die. It will be one or the other." On his way to the hall, he told a friend, "It takes more than that to kill a Roosevelt. I do not care a rap about being shot, not a rap."
At the hall, he stood before the big crowd. His face was white, but he stood straight, without help. Someone announced that Roosevelt had been wounded, but still planned to speak. Roosevelt's voice was very low, almost a whisper. "I am going to ask you to be very quiet, and please excuse me from making a long speech. I'll do the best I can, but there is a bullet in me." He paused and then continued. "It is nothing. I am not hurt badly. I have something to say, and I will say it, as long as there is life in my body."
Roosevelt's speech was not important. He said nothing that he had not already said many times before. What was important, however, was his cool courage. Men did not see his act as foolish or overly dramatic. They saw it as the brave act of a strong man. To the public, he was a hero. Roosevelt spoke for almost an hour. Finally, very weak, he let himself be helped from the hall. He was rushed to a hospital where doctors could examine the wound.
The doctors found that the bullet had broken a rib, but caused no serious damage. They decided to leave the bullet where it was. The next day, Roosevelt made a statement from his hospital bed. "Tell the people not to worry about me, for if I go down, another will take my place." President Taft and Woodrow Wilson sent messages of regret to Roosevelt. They announced that they would not campaign until Roosevelt was able to do so.
Roosevelt's condition improved quickly. After 2 weeks of rest, he was ready to continue his campaign for the presidency. He made a speech to a big crowd at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Everyone was surprised to see how strong and healthy he seemed. Wilson ended his campaign in New York City the next day. He told a cheering crowd of Democrats, "What the Democratic Party proposes to do is to go into power and do the things that the Republican Party has been talking about for 16 years.
On November 5th, the people voted. The winner was Woodrow Wilson. He received more than 6 million votes. Roosevelt was second with 4 million. Taft received only about 3.5 million. Wilson's victory was even greater in the electoral vote. He got 435. Roosevelt got only 88. And Taft received only the 8 electoral votes of Utah and Vermont. The Democrats won not only the White House, but also control of Congress. And a number of Democratic governors were elected in states formerly controlled by Republicans.
The 1912 campaign ended public life for Theodore Roosevelt. Soon after the election, a friend visited Roosevelt and talked of possible victory in 1916. I thought you were a better politician, Roosevelt said. The fight is over. We are beaten. There is only one thing to do. That is to go back to the Republican Party. You cannot hold a party like the Progressive Party together. There are no loaves and fishes, no financial support.
War was soon to break out in Europe. The United States would enter the struggle in 1917. As always, Roosevelt was ready to join in a fight. He asked for permission to organize an American force and lead it into battle in France. President Wilson, however, turned down the request. Roosevelt was sure that it was a political decision. He never forgave Wilson for keeping him out of the war. Although Roosevelt himself could not fight, four of his sons went into battle. One, his youngest son, Quentin, did not return. And when he received news of his son's death, Roosevelt wrote these words to honor him.
Only those are fit to live who do not fear to die. And none are fit to die who have shrunk from the joy of life. Both life and death are parts of the same great adventure. All of us who give service and stand ready for sacrifice are torchbearers. We run with the torches until we fall, satisfied if we can then pass them to the hands of other runners. The torches whose flame is brightest are carried by the brave men on the battlefield and by the brave women whose husbands, lovers, sons, and brothers struggle there. These are the torchbearers. These are they who have dared the great adventure.
Roosevelt's own great adventure was itself coming to an end. He had a serious ear infection and suffered from painful attacks of inflammatory rheumatism. He had difficulty hearing and could not walk. But he was still cheerful. He spent his 60th birthday in the hospital. To his family and friends, he said, "I am ahead of the game." Nobody ever packed more kinds of fun and interest into 60 years. Death came to Roosevelt as he slept on the night of January 6th, 1919. Vice President Thomas Marshall said, "Death had to take him sleeping, for if Roosevelt had been awake, there would have been a fight." Next Sunday, we will begin the story of the presidency of Woodrow Wilson. The 28th American president believed government should take an active part in social reform efforts. Well, that's Learning English Weekend, the Sunday edition. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. Jonathan Evans will be with you tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast from The Voice of America.